All right, we are live. Hi, this is William Ramsey. Welcome to William Ramsey Investigates. On today's show, I have a very special guest, a returning guest. His name is M.R. Gorga, G-O-R-G-A. And we spoke back in July 2021 of his first-rate book, titled was Demons Among Us, Shocking Real-Life Stories from the Paranormal. And now, it's been a year, a little bit over a year, but it has 113 five-star ratings. It's a bestseller. So he reached out to me and said, hey, let's do something before Halloween. I was like, on that right away. So I'm delighted to have him back. So M.R. Gorga, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me back. I'm excited for the show.
Cool. Maybe people who didn't, and I'll put a link to our older show, but maybe you can just go over kind of your background, what led you to write this book, and then we can go into kind of some of the stuff you want to talk about.
Yeah, sure. Well, I've been writing since I was a little kid, and one of the stories there is that I like to tell is my fourth grade teacher had given an assignment to write a story, and I wrote some story about some mummy on a murdering spree or something like that, and some subject matter that probably someone my age shouldn't be writing. And so I handed in, and I was nervous, and my parents get a phone call that night from my teacher. And I was thinking, I'm like, oh man, I'm in real trouble, you know, for this story. But it was quite the opposite. He said, you know, your son has a real talent for writing. You need to sign him up for the Young Authors Club immediately. And so I've been writing my whole life in some form or another. I was in journalism and then advertising, copywriting and marketing collaterals and things of that nature. And Demons Among Us was my first foray into the paranormal space. And lo and behold, it went to number one bestseller on Amazon. And when I first released it, I reached the new release in 10 categories, which was ghosts and hauntings, supernatural, occults and demonism, and a whole bunch of other categories I can't remember, but there are 10 of them. And so it was quite a first strike for a first book.
That's awesome. So you really kind of really touched something people were interested in, right? I mean, so you have this great response. Can you talk about kind of the feedback you got from the book?
Well, the response has just been just overwhelming. I mean, and it's everywhere I go. I mean, it's other, you know, I had George Norrie himself who said, well, this is going to go down as a classic. You know that. And I almost fell off my chair for him to say that. And it's been, you know, praised by others in the paranormal space and radio space as well. But it's really making people feel comfortable to kind of come out and share their stories. You know, when you write a book like Demons Among Us, the whole time you're thinking, man, people are going to think I'm out of my mind here. People are going to think I'm crazy. And then I released it, and then it was quite the opposite. It made people feel comfortable to come out and say, well, I've had this kind of situation, and I have this story, and this is something that happened that had happened to me, and all these kind of like haunting stories that people never felt comfortable sharing because they thought people were gonna, frown upon them or think they're crazy, the book has really just kind of made people feel comfortable. You know, even my own mother, and so she says. She says, you know, I've read your book, and, you know, I have a story I never told anyone. I said, what? She goes, yeah. She goes, I've never told anyone all these years. So she tells me the story. Now, I won't tell the story because it's hers to tell, but I was just shocked. So she tells me the story, and I said, well, why didn't you ever say anything, like, all of these years? She goes, I just, you know, just never did, just kept it inside and, you know, and so, but the book itself is kind of making people kind of feel comfortable about speaking about these kinds of supernatural paranormal experiences people have without them thinking that they're crazy or they're, you know, they're mad or anything like that, because these things have been happening since the beginning of time. And it's just happening all around us in the invisible realm, And you know, there's stories from the dawn of time about this kind of stuff. So it's not a matter of being crazy.
And almost all cultures have this notion of evil spirits and good spirits.
So yeah, absolutely.
So it's almost universal outside of language or culture or ethnicity.
It is. It is. That's why I put the right in the beginning of the book, I have a quote from a Chinese philosopher, and he says, if from antiquity from the beginning of time until now, men have heard the voices of disembodied spirits and seen their forms, how can we say these things don't exist? And this was written in like 480 BC, I want to say. I have to go back and look, but you know, and this was like an ancient quote. So but this is how far back this thing goes, and
it's in the Bible too. Yeah, it's in the Bible. So the book, the most read book in the Old Testament, talks about that. God says don't communicate with spirits, and then
yes,
there's the witch at Endor. I think it was
Witch of Endor.
Samuel.
So he tried to conjure up Samuel at the Witch of Endor. But yeah, so these things have been, you know, trying to communicate and to trying to influence and, you know, affect lives since the dawn of time.
And what kind of new encounters have you kind of had? You say people are reaching out to you with new stories. I know your mom has a story. What other kind of things have people told you about or confirmed for you? Or
oh wow, well, people they reach out and they tell me, like, well, I have something in my home. There's experiencing poltergeist experiences. They thrash my home, and I don't know how to get rid of these things, and they attack me. One woman was like, was trying to pull my hair out, or you know, cut my hair for, I guess, some kind of like demon incantation of something, some sort. But and when these people tell me these things, you can really, really sense the helplessness in their voice, because these are very, very tormenting spirits. They torment people's lives, and people feel very, very helpless against them. And so I hear these kinds of stories from people, you know, all the time.
I had one too when I was growing up. This was the most like straight-laced girl that I knew. You would just like a preppy. You would think that she had nothing. Her house was haunted by some kind of poltergeist. And she said it literally like walked through her at night, and it would do certain things like it was still alive. So it was like they thought it was the former owner. But if you saw her on the street, you'd never know that she had had this horrible experience. You know, like they were traumatized. Like I think they tried to get like a, you know, faith healer or something to kind of exorcise the house. It was in a wealthy community, you know, very strange, very different.
Yeah. Well, I mean, stuff happens to, you know, normal everyday people, you know. I mean, you know, we can open doors to these things, but, you know, sometimes this stuff just happens to, you know, just your everyday citizen, you know.
I mean, did you find proof that demons exist? I mean, I know in old, what is it, the Solomonic magic, the Goetia, there's 72 demons. I mean, do you think that these are real entities, not figments of the imagination or some psychological thing?
No. So the proof I have is my own personal testimony and my own experiences. So when you're talking about, you know, proof, all I need to do is you know, resort back to my own personal encounters. And not only my personal encounters, but the personal encounters of many, 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 many people from the beginning of time. So, you know, all these people are, you know, insane. And, you know, not only that, you see the effects of, you know, of what these things, you know, do to people's individual lives and things of that nature. So that's a real proof right there. But to me, it's, you know, all the numbers of going back since, you know, to day one. I mean, it's astronomically impossible for mathematically impossible for, you know, these things not to be real and everybody imagining them since the dawn of time.
So you think definitely there's some entity, there's some other realm where these entities exist and come into our plane of existence, right?
Yeah, yeah. So it's the spirit realm. It's the demonic realm. And it's functioning at a high degree all around us 24/7. And the reason why I wrote the book was to kind of pale back the veil of the paranormal, to expose those things that were actually happening in the invisible world or the invisible realm, to kind of shed light on these things. And, you know, the reason I wrote it was because I was going under a series of attacks at night, you know, nightly for, you know, a week to 10 days or 2 weeks or whatever it was. And so I was getting choked by invisible iron hands that would, you know, practically choke me to death and with, you know, come with like paralyzing fear.
Like sleep paralysis type thing?
Well, more than sleep paralysis. I don't know if any sleep paralysis that involves choking with hands. So,
and you've kind of become a pretty committed Christian through your experience, right? I don't know if you were raised as in a Christian or.
Yeah, well, my background was as a kid I was raised Catholic, but it didn't really matter. It's not like, you know, the parents dragged us to church, but it really had no kind of bearing on our lifestyle or, you know, our decisions or our life or anything like that. It was just go to church and then just act and do and be any way you want, right? So it had no real kind of inward working. Later on in life, I became a follower of Jesus Christ. And that's when things just started happening immediately with, you know, satanic attacks and manifestations of that nature. I mean, since day one for me.
Wow. And so how would you define yourself, a Bible-believing Christian or not a Catholic or what? Because I would say that would be my definition of myself as a Bible-believing Christian.
Right. I consider myself a follower of Jesus Christ. You know, I don't ascribe to a lot of the tags simply because, you know, we've messed them all up. And so to make it easy, I just say I'm a follower of Jesus Christ. I believe fully in the Bible. And I believe in the power that he's actually endued his followers to overcome all these demonic entities.
And so you, I mean, we talked the last time, I know I have my notes from last year. We talked about kind of some of these films that are out there, New England. I know we covered some of the old English stuff, but is there anything like other the history that we didn't talk about last time that you'd like to talk about today?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people think the, you know, the witch trials was the first witch panic in early America, but it goes even earlier than that. The first witch panic actually happened in Connecticut in the 1650s, which was like 40 years before the Salem witch trials. So the Salem witch trials were in 1691, and this stuff was happening in 1653 or 55 or somewhere around there. And it has one of the first recorded witch trials and execution in early American history, and that was in Hartford, Connecticut. And so the story is really, really interesting. So there was, it involved a confessing or professing witch named Rebecca Greensmith, and she was in prison for witch crimes. And so she was already in prison when this story takes place. Well, what happened was there's this woman, a Christian woman and a godly woman in the community. Her name was Ann Cole. And, you know, history records her as very pious. And so she started experiencing some like a trance-like state. And she would go into this trance-like state. And within that state, she would start hearing these voices, and it turns out what she was, and they were plotting against her life. It turns out she was hearing the voice of these demons, almost imagine like a round table, right? So there's this demonic discussion between numerous demons discussing how they're going to ruin her life. And they're saying, well, you know, we could destroy her marriage, we can spoil her good name, you know, you can mar her name, you know, in relation to Christ and things of that nature. And then in the conversation, she overhears, well, who are we going to get to do it? And
this episode is brought to you by ShipStation. If you run an e-commerce business, you know how much work it takes to produce something great while dealing with complicated shipping issues. That's why over 130,000 companies have turned to ShipStation, an innovative tool that allows you to focus less on shipping and more on building your brand. With ShipStation, you can manage orders, label printing, reporting, and customer service on one easy-to-use dashboard. You'll reduce warehouse costs with reliable enterprise solutions and save thousands on shipping costs with discounts up to 89% off. Plus, you can effortlessly import orders from everywhere you sell online. So, turn your shipping challenges into opportunities for growth. Go to ShipStation.com and use code POD to sign up for your free 60-day trial. That's ShipStation.com, code POD.
Grand Canyon University, an affordable private Christian university, is one of the largest and fastest growing universities in the country, offering more than 270 programs online. In addition to federal grants and aid, GCU's online students received nearly $130 million in institutional scholarships in 2022. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu/myoffer to see the scholarships you may qualify for.
The name Rebecca Greensmith comes up. And so Ann Cole tells her husband. Her husband tells the ministers. The ministers tell two other ministers. And then they confront Rebecca Greensmith, who was already in prison for other witch crimes. And she was just waiting trial, I guess, for the other crimes. So, but when they confront her, she confesses that it's true. She says, yes. She goes, I was going to be a part of this thing. And then they start talking to her and pressing her for information. And then she just comes out with this amazing confession, saying, detailing the relationship that she had with the devil. And so she had said, that the devil had first appeared to her in the form of a fawn, and after a few times, and it followed her homes, and after a few times, he finally spoke through the fawn, right? And so, and then after that, he starts to kind of like show himself in, you know, in physical form. And not only that, so she would have these witch gatherings in the woods, and have, witch masses in the woods, if that's a term. So she would have these witch meetings in the woods and everything. And so she confessed to that, where they would drink sack or a form of wine at that time and dance around the fire and try to conjure spirits and unleash, you know, witchcraft spells over the land and everything. But then it was the most shocking confession of all. She says, I have had regular sexual encounters with the devil, and she described it as ecstatic and repulsive at the same time. And so she said, you know, so she it was this confession which led her to her execution. And so they executed her in Hartford, in the middle of Hartford at the square, alongside her husband. So they were both executed for her crimes. I'm not exactly sure of all what he was involved in, but they hung her beside, they hung them both.
Wow, that's incredible. I've never heard that story. I mean, there was a lot of weird things going on in New England at that time, believe it or not. Like, mm-hmm. I've read some of the Cotton Mather stories.
Oh, yeah. The Increase
Mather. They talk about a lot of, it was much more strange than people would think. they think of these very dry Puritan types. There's
No, they weren't. And you got to understand who these people were. They weren't dumb, backwards people. These were the leaders of the early nation. These were like the creme de la creme, because Increase Mather was the most revered minister of the town of Boston. And so basically, people were, you know, to report to him, you know. And so he, when he died, I mean, he was so revered that when there was a month-long mourning period in the colonies, because this man was so revered of who he was. I mean, he helped build colonies and, you know, and towns and, you know, so this man, you know, we're talking about these ministers at the time. They were not uneducated. These were very, very, very smart people for that time period. And even now, because when you read their writings or their sermons, they still speak with power and an unction or an anointing that's still on them. It blows me away, the level and depth of spiritual insight that these people have, which would make our generation absolutely sad. In fact, they'd probably roll over in their graves if they saw the condition of the church today.
Good point. It really is a good point. They were very intelligent and dedicated.
I've read
some of Jonathan Edwards' stuff. What is it? Mm-hmm. Whiteside, one of the itinerant ministers. I can't remember. He's in the First Great Awakening. I forgot his name. Whitfield. Mm-hmm. I think Whitfield.
Too. George Whitfield.
George Whitfield. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean, why do you think that there was, I mean, why do you, there's so much witchcraft and things like that happening at the first, really the inception of this country. Why do you think that was happening? Why? I mean, and even that story, I'm curious also, a second question would be, how did you find of that story about Rebecca Greenspan?
Well, when you do, you know, research for a book like Demons Among Us, you really land yourself down some really dark rabbit holes. And I, you know, in my investigation or research of witchcraft, somewhere it came up along the line. I don't know. it's in my resources somewhere. You know, it was just one of those stories. I tried to actually put it in Demons Among Us, but I had to edit it out because at the end of the day, it just did not fit. I couldn't make it fit. Because, you know, once you get to that editing process, you're like, well, this doesn't, I want it there, but it's not servicing the story in the way that it should. So I had to kind of cut it out. And so, but it's a story that I like to tell because it's, you know, very little known and it's fantastically horrifying. And I have a theory about why there was so much demonic activity in the early days of America when we first came over from England. And my speculation is a spiritual speculation. So when we were escaping, the church, these people, these Protestants, were Reformationists, I should say. So when these Reformationists were escaping the bloody persecution from the Church of England and England itself, where many people were died and tortured and, you know, at their hands, because they wanted a reformed pure church without the pomp and ceremony of what they called like popery or popish trash and ornamented, because it was not, you know, they read the Bible, and what the Catholic Church was doing was not in the Bible. So they wanted a reformed, purer church than what was in, and this is where that skirmish led to the persecution. So they come over, and it's, you know, men like, you know, Bradford, and they come over like on the Arbella, you know, and, you know, the ships in that, you know, in that journey, there's like, I think there's like 12 ships. I could be wrong. But anyway, so the reason why they came to America in the first place, A, they felt called of God, and B, it was in their hearts to establish a land for the glory of God like the world had never seen. And this was written by Increase Mather, who you've mentioned. And this was the sole purpose of them coming over, was to establish a land for the glory of God. So here we have these very godly people coming over here. And so much so, and so driven in their faith that they were, you know, they've endured persecution, and they said, we got to get out of here because, you know, these guys are killing us, right? So we're going to go worship God in this new land. Well, you get to the new land, and the new land is, you know, is trees upon trees upon trees upon trees. And in those trees are the Native Indians and Native Americans and tribes. And so so that was something that they've always kind of, they had to get along with the Indian tribes, but they really tried to minister to them. They would not accept it for a very, very long time, because I've read a tribe's, one of the tribe leaders, he said to John Hale, he said, well, why didn't you tell us sooner? He says, we've been trying to tell you for 27 years. You won't listen. And so, because there was a period where revival really started to kind of break out, and these Indians were getting saved, and they were coming to Christ. And so anyway, their thing was with
powwow?
The powwows, right, yes. It was escaping my thoughts. Yes, so their thing was with the powwows, because what they were doing with the powwows is they were conjuring spirits. Animal spirits for healing, which they believed they were taking dictation from the spirit realm. But the Reformationists understood they were getting dictation, but they were getting dictation from the demonic realm. And so they were offering sacrifices to the, you know, to plants and to the fires, tobacco, and things of that nature. So they were, and so they did this to when they didn't know how to heal, and they did this whether to know when to go to war. And so this was so ingrained in their culture that they had a hard time disconnecting from this ritual, because there's power in ritual. And so the Indians had a hard time stopping the powwow. So I think this was a contribution to it. So when these men of God came onto the new land, onto the soil they wanted to establish for God, it awakened the demonic realm, and there we start seeing all this otherworldly stuff.
Interesting,
because it had never been infiltrated before.
Not in a long time, right? Yeah, if ever. So right. It was the first kind of thing. So yeah. Then that's response, my theory, to this Christian. Yeah. No, it makes perfect sense. And yeah. But I mean, I think it's interesting too, because around the time when they're leaving England, that's when all kinds of witch stuff was going on there as well.
Yeah, they had stuff going on there. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they came over, and a lot of people didn't leave their superstitions behind. You know, there's judges who were superstitious, and there's, you know, so there was people, they were raised in superstition as well. So I don't want to paint everybody as that they were perfect, godly, you know, Christians or whatever. These were normal people who believed in God, and and they came over with their superstitions, excuse me, and their beliefs and everything that, you know, you just don't leave a country and stop being who you are when you land on the other side, you know?
Right, but King James, right alongside the King James Bible, he wrote mm-hmm. that book, Demonology, which is, yes, he thought there were three witches in Scotland who were trying to curse him and cursed his boat trying to cross the channel. And
yeah.
So he thought that it was real.
Well, James, yeah, because they think they caused his wife to go overboard. And so it was like right after his honeymoon. And so he was coming back from his honeymoon, and the storms rise, and he believed it was due to witchcraft, and that's what caused him to write Demonology.
Right. Which is a very interesting book. It's actually really fascinating. How would you so you have this kind of concept of witchcraft. Some people say it's good. There's white witches, there's black witchcraft. What's your take on your definition? I know that there's modern stuff is much different maybe than the old concept, but what do you, how do you define and describe the term witchcraft?
Yeah, I don't think witchcraft is either white or black. It's two sides of the same coin, and it's both two sides of with satanic roots. So it's a demonic roots. So it's, you're practicing the same side of the coin. Now, the white magic is, you know, herbal herbs and, you know, and spells and things of that nature. And the black magic is for, you know, darker nefarious reasons. But they're both branches of the same demonic tree. And, oh, by the way, and by the way, there are no good demons in the spirit realm.
Right. But I've heard that said, like, oh, I'm a white magician. I'm only interested in roots and, you know, healing and stuff like that. But I've always found them to be kind of facile, that argument. And,
yeah.
You know, I don't buy it. Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's my take. My take is there is, you know, there's no good demons, and B, you're still operating and functioning under demonic power, whether it's white or black.
And do you think that those kind of demonic powers are more prevalent today? Than, do you think that it comes and goes, like the influence of these dark spirits in civilizations? I mean, you can go all the way back to, the earliest kind of civilization in the Middle East, and it's like they're talking to demon gods or demon
spirits. Yes, that's what that's what those gods were. You talk about the Canaanite gods, and you talk about, you talk about Dagon, and you talk about, all those types of, Canaanite gods, and they were all, demons. And, even the Bible says, and they sacrificed their children to these gods. And then the Bible, he says, the Lord, he says, you sacrifice your children to demons, something I've never told you to do, nor would have entered into my heart, And so they were, they were worshiping. That's why idol worship is dangerous, because it's not worshiping an idol, it's worshiping a demon. Right. And so you have all these different civilizations that have all these different gods. And then that transfers over into the Greek and Roman things too, where you have, what was it? The Greek gods became the Roman gods, or the Roman gods became the Greek gods, or no, just a different name on them,
Right.
And so, and it was the same, the same thing. And so they were believing in, demons under a, under a various name,
Right. I mean, so that's it. Do you think that those, like the dark, I've heard some of these other Christian authors, they talk about the dark gods returning, or the gods, lowercase god, think that they're still at work, or they're coming back, or anything like that?
Yeah. Well, the way I look at it is there's always been the same amount of demons on the earth. Operating and functioning in this unseen realm, the spirit realm. There's just as many demons, and when they were expelled, now what these demons are fallen angelic beings who were expelled or cast out of heaven for rebellion against God, trying to overtake the throne under Lucifer's lead. And so when they were kicked out of heaven, Lucifer took a third of the angels with him. And so it's an awful lot of angels that fell. I don't know an exact number, but the same number is still operating. It's just now, I believe they're increasing the intensity because they know the time is short, meaning that I believe we're actually entering into or on the cusp of the last of the last days. And as we see the last of the last days approaching, you're going to see a real uptick in demonic activity, not so much in appearing as devils and monsters with horns and all that kind of stuff. You're just going to see an uprising in evil ideologies, and because he needs people to work through. And so he's going to work through government systems. He's going to work through financial systems. He's going to work through especially the financial system, because the last days is hallmarked by false miracles, false Christs, an antichrist, political leader, and a one world banking system that you access with your hand to buy and sell anything, what the Bible calls the mark of the beast. And not long ago, I saw a news report that there were people with things in their hands and they were buying stuff, right? Now, Revelation, the book of Revelation tells us he causes the devil or Lucifer, he causes all, both great and small, to receive a mark in their hand or their forehead. And without it, no one can buy or sell. And so there's a point where there's going to be a leader who makes people take this banking system chip, right? We know it's probably like some sort of like chip, some microchip, but the Revelator or John the Revelator who wrote that could only speak in the vernacular of his time. He didn't know what a microchip was, so he called it a mark. So I find it astounding that this was written thousands and thousands of years ago, and it's happening exactly like he saw it in every way, shape, and form. And so when I saw people walking around and buying things with the palm of their hand, that led me to think, well, here we are, because it's never been that way before.
Right. You can do that at the Whole Foods near where I live. You have the option to do a handprint and use that as your payment. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, first it's going to be optional. And you're going to see, I think, something like COVID and the whole mask thing was basically a soft launch. And so you're really going to see how people react. So they're going to be kind of persuaded by, well, you're not going to be able to feed your kids. You're not, how are you going to make money, right? I have to work. I have to take this mark. I have to feed my children. I have to take this mark. But once you take that mark, that's allegiance to the beast system. You're not getting saved after that. You've chosen who you want to follow. So the beast system is something that is aligns you with the devil and his system. And so, so the reason why I said all that is because people are walking around using this thing in their hands, something that somebody saw thousands and thousands of years ago to an absolute, coming to pass to an absolute T, makes me believe we're at the last of the last days and marching towards them.
I mean, think about that. Think about how many, the book of Revelation is involved in the Bible, and people don't, they just said it's there. We don't know for thousands of years. And I think even Martin Luther said, we don't understand this. It should just be taken out of the canon and put.
Well, they couldn't understand it because it was written for so far in the future. Those technologies didn't exist. The money system, there was no way to create a one world monetary system without, you know, without this this computer technology that we have now. So. And that just didn't exist. I mean, it would, at one point, it would have been impossible before Christopher Columbus sailed to the New World, right? It was just the very thought of sailing across the ocean in that regard. It didn't, and it was insane, and it was just impossible, right? And so I say that to say that it was. Talking about that revelation to that generation back then, it would have sounded insane, and it would have sounded absolutely impossible. How is this going to happen? Because they couldn't, you know, they didn't have what we have now.
They don't have the technology. They don't have.
They don't have the technology. Correct.
They don't have. They would. There's no way they could conceptualize that. The average person.
Right.
I mean, that's incredible.
Yeah.
You know, advance of a technology, even in the last 50 years. I mean, it's pretty something else. And I mean, you talk about these exorcists and things like that. I mean, they're still operating today. What do you think? How can you tell somebody's under demonic influence or have given themselves? Like, I've heard for people to be influenced, they have to say, come into my, you know, body or whatever. Do you, what are your thoughts on possession and how people are showing signs of demonic influence?
Right. Yeah. Well, possession itself, I mean, that's the most extreme form. Right. So the devil is going to take somebody over bodily, literally enter into their body, take over their spirit, take over their soul. Right. And so that's the most extreme form. Of course, the violence comes with it. The vulgarity comes with it. The, you know, the superhuman strength comes with it. And just, you know, the, or the starvation, they try to starve people, and so that they don't eat and they wither away. So they really, you know, destroy the human, an individual, literally from the inside out. You know, and then, of course, you've seen things like, you know, demonic languages and intelligences and things of that nature. So possession itself is the most extreme form of the working of the demonic. And that's obvious, right? You see somebody eating bugs.
It's based upon a true story called Possession.
Right, exactly.
A kid who was playing around with a Ouija board.
Yeah. Right, and then and so people and how this happens is people start tampering with the tools or the instruments of the demonic, which you just mentioned, the Ouija board, tarot, spiritists and witchcraft and fortune tellers and palm readers, horoscopes, and trying to contact the dead. And these people, they are hearing things, but, you know, they're not hearing their sweet old grandmother. You know, they're impersonating their sweet old grandmother. So you're actually hearing from demonic intelligences. So what these things actually do is they open up somebody to the demonic realm and invite these things, invite them. They look at it as a doorway or as an invitation. So you're inviting these things into your life by the use of these things. And so, and if you try to get a demon out or whatever, they would say something to the effect, well, I was invited. They want me here. This one's mine, right? I was invited. Well, no one said, you know, come into me. They were just trying to mess around with a Ouija board or whatever, right? But they see tampering with the spirit realm as a, you know, as an invitation. And I like to say this, entering into the spirit realm unprotected under Christ or unprotected by God is like jumping into a sea, into a shark tank full of sharks. And so you're going to get mauled at some point, right? And so, yeah, so all of these things, they work as an entry point into an individual's life. And the more you tamper with them, the more susceptible you become to actually being influenced and harassed. Now, I said possession is the most extreme form, and that's the obvious form. And then there's the not so obvious form, which is the everyday functionings of the demonic spirits and principalities in the everyday life. And what I mean by that is that if we could look at it, look at the spirit realm as influencer marketing. And we all know what influencer marketing is, right? So we take this product and we give it to somebody who has a billion followers on Instagram. And you say, hey, promote my product. And then they take this product and they disseminate it to all the, you know, all of the minions. And the minions start to talk about it to the, you know, to the other people, right? Now, if I was a smart devil or smart Lucifer, which he is, who would be the people that you try to go after with your to inject an ideology or an idea or a cause, right? I would go after the most influential people in the world. So I would go after presidents and heads of state. I'd go after judiciary, those in the judicial system, those in politics. I would go after rock stars. I would go after actresses and entertainers and singers, sports stars and networks. I would go after all of these people and inject my my beliefs or my causes into these people. So now here we got, because we're under a satanic system, is what we all live under, right? And so that's how it works. So you take this cause, and it goes out to the masses. Now these spirits, they all, in addition, these spirits, they also have roles and functions, and we all have names. You have a name, I have a name, but it's best recognized by what they do and the function they perform. And so what most people have never even considered is that there's spirits that are operating like the spirit of fear. So fear is a spirit. Spirits of suicide, spirits of anxiety, spirits of depression, spirits of lust and pornea, where we get our word pornography from, spirits of pharmakoi, where we get our term pharmaceutical from, and that word pharmakoi actually means sorceries. And so we have all of these spirits working in the world around us, influencing our everyday lives, and we don't even know it. And you don't have to bow down to a statue of the devil to worship Satan or Lucifer. All you have to do is be out from underneath the governments and the principles of God to be under the principles of Satan.
Interesting. And do you, why are the demons so malevolent? Why do they want to harm people or cause pain and suffering?
Well, first, they hate humanity, right? So first of all, they have an eternal hatred for humanity. And so the devil, in the Bible, it says the devil comes to steal, to kill, and destroy. And that's his mission, is to kind of destroy God's creation to get back at God. And so that's why it is because he has an intense hatred for mankind, because it's the creation of God, and he wants to destroy it however he can.
So it's biblical. It's all there.
Yeah, it's deeper than you think, you know.
It's like the cause of cosmological hatred or whatever for being thrust out.
And yeah, exactly. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. I've had guests on who say that aliens are demons because the metaphysics and all the stories are really the same stories. The UFOs,
yeah.
They're seeing lights, or they're scared or afraid, taken somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
What's your take on the whole are UFOs demons position?
Okay, so the Bible says that so the devil has supernatural power to transform himself into an angel of light. And not just the devil, I'm talking about the whole realm, right? And so they have power to transform themselves into any form or that they want. So they can appear like your sweet grandmother. They can appear like your deceased father or mother. And so they can take on many, many forms in order to deceive. They're highly skilled at deception. And their whole thing is to not just kill, steal, and destroy, but is to deceive. And so I believe that these aliens are demons in masquerade. And because you hear some of these stories, and they're always offering the same thing that was offered in the Garden of Eden, knowledge. They're always offering some form of knowledge. And it's the same, they've never changed the tactic since day one. So when Satan entered into the Garden of Eden, he says, you will be like God, knowing good and evil. Meaning, like, there's something here you don't know. I'm going to give you this knowledge. And that's what they always do. And I believe that they actually do that on a high governmental level too.
Interesting. It's interesting you say that, because since my reading into the occult and these people, they always misinterpret and reread the Garden of Eden story, because their view, it's God is keeping you from the tree of knowledge. And they always talk about knowledge. Yeah. So God is keeping you from knowledge, which means that we have the knowledge, but they always leave off the additional phrase.
Right. Knowledge of good exactly. and evil. The knowledge of good and evil. Right.
And you'll see that sign. Like, you'll see the tree of life with a lightning bolt on it. And that's mm-hmm. kind of, you'll see that symbology in movies and things like that.
Yeah.
And well, that's what that means, is like Lucifer giving you the tree of knowledge, the knowledge that God is keeping from you, you know?
Right. And so when you see some of these like alien stories, the MO is exactly the same. And so nothing's changed. So to me, these are just demonic entities in masquerade, you know, demons with masks on. And I believe UFOs are also, it's almost like this demonic firework display. Like, you know, they can transform, they can create things and forms and things of that nature. And like you said, the physics, excuse me, if something going, you know, 90,000 miles an hour and just making a right turn, like, that's not sophisticated technology. That's like something in the spirit. That's like something spiritual. Why do they disappear? They disappear, right? So there's a spiritual dimension to them, and I believe it's just a deception of evil and the demonic. And I think as we go into these last days, more and more, we're going to see more of this stuff, this kind of stuff, in order to deceive mankind away from the knowledge of God.
Really interesting, because if you believe these are UFOs, then the entire kind of God, Christian, maybe biblical view is questioned, because then the creation is different and there's actually other beings in the universe or whatever. So it kind of does play into that realm. And the UFOs are also tricksters, kind of like the demons are. So there's a lot of similarities and a lot of strange things. And mm-hmm. also, a lot of these people are like, oh, the UFOs are your friends. They're not actually, trying to deceive you. They're coming here. Right. But they
they're not
really
going to come and say, we're trying to deceive you. That's what deception is. Right? And so it was funny. So I forget who I was talking to, and they said something in regards to, what if the alien came down and told us, you know, such and such about, you know, the planets, or such and such about this or that. And so I immediately said, how do you know it would be telling the truth? So we all have this idea that the aliens are going to come down, they're going to tell us something. what makes you think that they're going to tell you the truth? There's something that in us that's like...
Already, why don't they come here and just tell us? Why don't they just visit on, like, DC, drop down, say hi? What are they running away? Why isn't there tangible evidence or something?
Right.
There's a lot of issues there.
Yeah.
MR, we are almost at the hour. Do you have time to take a few questions?
Oh, yeah. That'd be great.
Let's see. I've got some lined up here. Murda the K says, what happens to people who make deals with demons, like using the Goetia?
Every deal can be negated by God. And so I think that people like to make a league or a contract or a bargain or a compact, however you want to say it, right? The devil has you believe that you're in a contract that you can't get out of, and he has your soul. That tie can be broken by God through the power of Jesus Christ. So he cannot keep your soul. Jesus is stronger, bigger, badder, and meaner.
Gotcha. And Sabrina asked, do you have any knowledge of kind of like the more extreme Christian groups coming to the New World, kind of like Rosicrucians?
I haven't come across that in what I have researched. So the research that I came across was that intrigued me was basically the coming to the New World. To me, is a fascinating story. And then some of the people of that community I found very fascinating. And so my research, I haven't dug around for it. Maybe it's there, I don't know. But my research hasn't taken me there.
Gotcha. And then Space Marine asks, do you think the jabs might make people more susceptible to demonic possession?
Yeah, I think that there was something about altering the DNA. So I think there was a real, real demonic evil push behind this thing. That remains to be seen. I think we'll start getting the bottom of that in the coming years. But I think there was something very, very highly, extremely sinister on a scale that we've never seen before in humanity.
Well, that's a bold statement. I think I agree with you. And it kind of ties into the Mark of the Beast. You saw this massive psychological operation. Also, you can't have a job. Like these mandates said, you're not able to work. So it sounds almost something like what they'll do with the Mark of the Beast.
I think it was a soft launch for the Mark of the Beast.
Yeah, you're right. I think you're right. Sabrina also asked again, can a believer be possessed?
Believer can still have... if you're tampering with things, yeah, like I talked about earlier, but the believer can still have spirits existing that have not been cast out or renounced and things of that nature. So, but if you're walking with Christ and you're believing, you've renounced all of these things of witchcraft and all of these operations of Satan. You have to guard yourself because, there's a story in the Bible where it's like they cast out these demons from a man, and then it says the spirits went through the land looking where to go, but then they came back to that person with seven more demons stronger than themselves and possessed that person. So, I believe they can, but you have to guard yourself. So it's not like you can just practice anything you want and say you're Christian. You have to be fully walking and protected and guarded. You have to guard your heart.
Right. RR asks, could you give an example of the Catholic Church teaching something that is not in the Bible?
Being a pope.
Yeah, pope isn't in the Bible. Transmutation isn't in the Bible.
That's right. That's right.
Confessions aren't in the Bible.
Yep. Well, it says confess to one another, but it's like it was never about confessing your sins to a priest. It says, the Bible says there's one mediator or one go-between God and man, and that's the man Christ Jesus. And that's who you take your sins to. So the whole system itself is highly unbiblical, and that's why the Reformation has tried to have a purified church, but the powers that be weren't having them, so they decided to kill them.
Yeah, you can look up the precursor to Martin Luther was Savonarola in Tuscany, and he was a reformer. He just said, "You guys, let's get rid of all this wealth," and he did the bonfire of the vanities.
Yeah,
and the Pope burned him at the stake right there, right at the same center thing. And that's Martin Luther. Once that happened, he's like, "There can't be. It's going to have to be reformable. We're having trouble reforming this kind of corruption that killed somebody who wanted to do better."
Well, what happened? Yeah, it's true. But what happened was, so the Church of England had such deep ties to Catholicism, Roman Catholicism, and so the reformers wanted to, purify that or bring it down to what the Bible actually really teaches, and so they reformed a little bit, but they didn't reform enough. They still looked like the Catholic Church. And then they wrote out like how to worship like in a missal, like in their missals or whatever, in their books or whatever. So they created how you're gonna worship on this day and in this service, and it had no room for God at all. It was just, this is what you're going to do. There was no personal relationship involved at all. It's just a matter of you're going to do this, you're going to kneel, you're going to stand, you're going to say this prayer, you're going to say, there was no relationship at all.
Right, and that's the mass. Like, there's no teaching in the original Bible to have this mass, like get up, stand up, take the, whatever. Yeah, it's interesting. Nope. Brando asks, do you think angels exist and how do we discern the difference? Because it says in the Bible Satan can come as an angel of light.
Yeah. What are your thoughts? Yeah. Well, you're going to need, yes, angels exist. Absolutely. In fact, you know, it's in the Bible. And when angels showed up, people fell down like they were dead because they were so mighty, so powerful, so glorious. And first of all, let me just dispel a myth that, okay, so angels aren't like babies with wings. And they're not, you know, they're not women with wings. These are a masculine, warlike culture. And so when these people see these beings, they fall down, they literally almost die, or they try to worship them. And then the angel says, get up, you're not to worship me.
He also says, they also almost always say, do not be afraid.
Yeah. And they always say, don't be afraid.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Because don't be afraid because they literally crap their pants. Right. And so, so do the angels exist and how can we discern the difference? The difference being that, the evil always comes with some unnerving, off-putting vibe. Like there's always something that makes you feel like something's wrong here. Right. You'll know by a measure of peace, and you'll know, you'll know by, you know, you won't have that feeling in a sense that there's something wrong here. And that word discern, it's so, such a targeted word that you said there, discern. You also have to have your sense of discernment very, very sharp. And you get that by having a prayer life. And the deeper and intimate you are in your prayer life with Christ, the sharper that discernment becomes. And then you'll be able to discern the good from the evil.
I don't know if this is on topic, but We Steals Plato Snake says, what's are your thoughts on MK Ultra dissociation practices, basically matching invocation rituals from the Book of the Dead? Do you know anything about that?
I don't know much about it, but it sounds like it would be something that it's steeped in, Luciferianism and Satanism. So,
well, we are at the hour mark, MR, and what's next on the agenda? What do you have coming up, and how can people reach out to you?
Oh man, well, okay. So first off, I have the audio book coming out soon. I'm shooting for December 2nd. So the audiobook will be coming out very, very soon. I also wrote a full-length feature screenplay that I'm looking to get producers or agents behind. I'm super excited about it. It's a period piece of about a witch trial, and it was from all of my research into this content, into this period that caused me to write this. You know, it was like 350 years of researching of trials and various things of that nature and witchcraft. So I penned this screenplay, which I believe is probably the most harrowing true-to-life witch trial you'll ever see. So again, I'm looking for people to get behind. So if someone's out there, they want to team up with a best-selling author on a very witchy script, reach out to me.
Right. And where can people find the book, and where can they reach you?
You can find the book on Amazon. Right now, it's the Kindle version is available for $1.99, available till the end of Halloween. So if you're going to get it for the lowest, one of the lowest prices I've ever put it on for the Kindle version, get it now. You could also get the print version as well. Get it on Amazon, and you can reach out to me on Instagram at m.r.gorga, and reach out at Facebook at mrgorga.
Mrgorga, G-O-R-G-A.
G-O-R-G-A.
Facebook, right.
Yeah, and not K. Kind of
covered all this stuff before Halloween. I'll put a link into our earlier discussion and the title of the book again, if you're not on YouTube or Rockfin, is Demons Among Us, Shocking Real-Life Stories from the Paranormal, and it's M.R. Gorga. So thanks so much for your time.
Thank you for having me. It was great.
Right, take care. Great to talk
to you. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Stay there.